Hey there, and welcome to episode number 9 of Become a Guitarist Today with myself, Adam Roach, and co-host today,
Mark Turner. How you going, guys?
Thanks, Mark, for doing this for me.
My pleasure, and thanks for inviting me. It's been a pleasure to co-host an episode with you, mate.
Yeah, no worries. So hopefully we'll get some more done, because Mark's got lots of contacts in the blues scene.
I've been hosting a show called The Whipping Post on Plenty Valley FM for about the last 10 years. So I've interviewed a few people over the time, and there's lots of great talent in this country, and just in Melbourne alone, there's a lot of great talent, a lot of great guitar players. So, and we're about to talk to one of the best in the business, the very amazing, very wonderful Jeff Atchison.
So can you tell us a bit about how you know Jeff?
I've been following Jeff for the past 20 years. I went and saw him play at the Barrel Bar back in Croydon about 20 years ago, and he blew me away back then, and I've been following him ever since.
Very good.
So yeah, he's great. Great local guitarist, and travels the world once a year or twice a year too.
Oh, cool. So look forward to the interview.
Yes.
Now, Mark and I, we go way back to 1986.
High school.
Greenwood High School.
Mm-hmm.
And we pretty much just started doing bands from there together.
Mm-hmm. School bands, and then Eclipse, and yep. Many other things. Busted Up more recently.
Yep. Currently you're doing Mr. Blues as well?
Yeah, Mr. Blues. I'm playing some solo gigs.
So let's go over to the interview with Jeff and find out exactly how old he was when he first started playing.
It's hard to remember exactly how old. I was somewhere around 9 or 10.
Yep.
And I had discovered my mum's old guitar under the stairs of the house that we grew up in this old railway station. It was two stories, and this old guitar was hanging on a hook inside the closet space under the stairwell, and I guess we all knew it was there, but I was just rummaging around under there and discovered it and picked it up, but I guess I got it in my head that I'd like to play it. Just thinking about it, I had a go at a few other instruments. My dad got me a side drum from he played in the brass band. He was a trumpet player. So I'd had a go at the side drum. I'd had a go at the cornet. My uncle, I remember, got me his little harmonica as well, which I played until it fell apart. It was a cheap Chinese thing. You know. Yeah. I had a repertoire of about half a dozen tunes that I'd made up on it. So I think I always wanted to play something. It was in me, and it had to come out. But it was the guitar, finding that guitar and messing around with that, that it started to come together.
Did you teach yourself to start with, or you went to a teacher?
No, my dad sent me to a teacher. I had probably half a dozen lessons with this guy, and he was a good guy. He wasn't the most adept guitar player. He was just a campfire guitar player and.
Yeah.
Campfire chords, I mean, and he played in a couple of rock bands around the place. And anyway, he showed me how to tune it up and how to form chords and what the notes were. And he was trying to teach me out of a Mel Bay book
how to
read. And I didn't get too far with that. I used to fake it, and I'd memorize the parts in the book and then go to the lesson the next week and play from memory.
Yeah.
And then he sprung me eventually.
Bit of sight reading test.
But you know how it went back in those days. I don't know what it's like now, but they'd start with little nursery rhymes and these daggy little little twinkle little stars. And it's like, shit, man, that's not what they're playing on Countdown. That's not what I want to play.
No, that's good.
And there's no rock and roll in the books, you know. Even if you got the sheet music back in the 70s of, whatever the latest AC/DC tune was, what was written in the music had bore no resemblance to what Angus and Malcolm Young were playing.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, it hasn't really changed a lot. Those books are still out, and there's not really many books out that, can get straight into, like, AC/DC, things like that. I mean, it's a few, but I think that's why a lot of kids, they just want to play straight away rather than learn to read the notes. I guess.
Yeah. It's a long process.
Yeah.
I think a good teacher will give you stuff that will entertain you along the way and make you, there's lots of little things that you can do to give someone that feeling that they want from music. you know, along the way. It's like, you know, throwing little treats out there. Did you know you could do this? You know, and you're probably ready to know this little trick, but try to keep them up with the, you know, learning the important stuff at the same time. But anyway, yeah, largely self-taught. I just went home and I just started. Once I knew a few moves on the guitar, I became a good improviser. I guess to this day, I'm good at making shit up, but I couldn't play you anything out of the book.
Yeah. Now, do you remember one of the first songs you learnt to play?
I can tell you the first guitar teacher that I had, the first song, he was doing that, trying to engage me with, you know, like a hit song. But the hit song at the time was Mamma Mia by ABBA. And he worked out what that first riff was. I couldn't play it for you now.
Well, that was my next question. Can you play now?
But a little later on, as I started teaching myself, the deal that my folks gave, because I wanted an electric guitar. I had no interest in the acoustic guitar at all. It's like, you know, none of the cool dudes. Maybe I was a Countdown kid. You know, I grew up in that era. Every Sunday night, you know, we were watching the TV. So I wanted one of those guitars that those guys were playing, and it looked better in front of the mirror. You know? the deal with my folks was that if I learned to play Rebel Rouser by Duane Eddy, if I could figure that out, then electric guitar would be in the bag. And I can play that. That's all right. Here we go. Of course, it was usually tuned down, and you go. I can't play it in the next key, but that's it. Can't transpose yet. but that was the thing. But I just played that for him, and then it was like, all right, electric guitar. Here we go. Right?
That's good. Well, that's actually in the exams book now, Rebel Rouser.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. I think grade two or grade three, one of those. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It was a great old tune.
Yeah.
I think that was the only electric guitar song my folks knew of. So Duane Eddy was a big star, and that must have been in the early '60s when he hit with that Pipeline and all those tunes. Yeah.
Oh, very good. So have you ever taught guitar yourself?
I teach a lot of guitar.
Oh, do you?
But my teaching is more workshops. I started doing this many years ago now. I was in the States, and I had a deal with the Gibson Guitar Company. I guess they were trying to help me out. You know, they knew I was trying to get a foothold in America, and they recommended me to Jorma Kalkinen up in Ohio. And Jorma was just establishing this guitar school, which was set on his ranch. So it's called the Fur Peaks Ranch. It's still going now. It's a very famous facility in the States now. Of course, Jorma Kalkinen was the lead guitar player for the Jefferson Airplane and Hot Tuner and his Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, all that stuff. So Gibson recommended me to Gibson as an instructor. When they suggested it to me, I just sat there and went, okay, it's something. Teach? I've never taught in my life. But it sounded like a gig coming up. I'll just say yes. That was in 2008. It's just been amazing. They gave me that. The way that one works is they don't hire music teachers. They hire professional performers, people that play for a living. And they've got some, you know, super famous people that do it now, including Warren Haynes, and Teal Burbridge has done it. And they give you a class of maybe 10 or so students, and they're yours for the weekend. So you're with them from Friday through to Sunday, and just doing a couple of workshops a day, and then you sort of hang with them and jam with them and so on. And doing that gig, I've done it something like 17 times now over the years. And we've just booked in another one for next year. Awesome. And doing that style of workshop, two things, it taught me how to teach, but it also showed me a way that I could do teaching without having to commit to turning up at the one, like a music store, or be at my house on a regular basis every week, because with touring, you know, touring is so unpredictable. You know, you're on the road, you know, for a month, and then you're home for 2 weeks, and then you're gone for 2 weeks, and so on. So it's very difficult to have a set schedule for students. So to this day, I do this now. In fact, I've got one coming up next week where I'll advertise a workshop for a Saturday morning. You know, we get together around about 11 o'clock. We might do 3 hours or something like that. But I keep the class size small. I keep it to about 10 people. So I am able to give everybody sufficient attention. Everyone's, you know, at a slightly different level or needs different things. And I've got a great love for doing these things. I really, really enjoy it. And I get us all to play together. I think you could learn a lot from, you know, actually playing music. So, yeah, we just got through a few little tips. And, you know, did you know you could do this? Did you know you could do that? Mm-hmm. You got all that down, just one more step and you could do this too. Yeah, things like that. And then we'll play a little.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Jeff, you mentioned Warren Haynes and Atil. Tell us what it was like playing with the Allmans that night that you got up and jammed with them, man, at the Beacon Theatre in New York. That would have been amazing.
Yeah, man, my Mount Everest moment. That was, for me, being a lifelong Allman Brothers Band fan.
Yeah.
Getting up on stage with the band, and it was all of 10 minutes, and we jammed on an old, can't remember the man's name, Little Milton tune.
Oh, yeah.
Thankfully, it was a Little Milton tune. We didn't jam on, they didn't start up Jessica or, or Whipping Post or one of those monstrous things. So it was just a blues in C, and it just took on its own life. You know, we traded licks, and I was standing up on stage, enormous stage. I mean, Greg, God rest his soul, he was so far to my right, I couldn't even see him.
Oh, wow.
But I was in between Warren and O'Teal, and they just really looked after me on stage. And
that's awesome.
One of the most frightening and joyous things that I've ever done. You know.
That's
amazing. And thankfully, there's some footage of it, and they make an album of the gig. Mm. I mean, they did right up in all those later years, or every gig that they did, you could buy. At the end of the show, as you were walking out, you could buy a recording of that show.
That's amazing.
Wow.
Yeah. They would package them up, and so I've got it. So it's a treasured thing, because it's like an Allman Brothers Band album, live album, and an aim on the back of it. So,
that's cool.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool.
That sounds real. So with those workshops that you do you go into scales or just more like jamming?
A little bit of both, and I do adopt a stream of consciousness. I've learnt this over many years. I used to prepare the whole workshop, and then so many times I would get there and I realized that for the class I had, none of what I prepared was really relevant the situation we were in. So I have some prepared written material just in case we need it. And these days I've got it saved to PDFs, so we end up talking about that. I can scratch a few things out on the spot and say, look, give me your email address and I'll send you, you know, something later on. I do try to concentrate on playing together, jamming together. Like, we're just sitting down with the guitars and we're just playing some music together. Mm. And then I just let the conversation happen. And probably the biggest barrier is getting everybody to just drop the inhibitions. We're all amongst friends. We're all fans of the guitar and fans of music. And we've all got questions about how we could be better at it. So sometimes it's a session that may turn into a full-on session on how to go from that step of using your basic blues pentatonic scales to forming a complete diatonic scale. And sometimes I'll get players that know their diatonic scales, but it's like, okay, well, how do we turn these diatonic scales into and play all of the modes? I like those light bulb moments of when your student realizes that a lot of the stuff that has confused them for so many years isn't that hard. If someone points out to them, you know, for instance, that same that do re mi scale can be a minor scale or a Mixolydian scale or a Lydian scale or a Locrian scale, depending on where you put it on the fretboard, yeah, things like that. You know, are just a matter of pointing it out to somebody and showing them when, you know, if you move it here, it'll sound like that, and if you move it there, it'll sound like that. And And so I have those things, but it's just little formulas of moving those common shapes around to get different modal effects, you know. Mm. So sometimes we go there, sometimes we don't. Sometimes it's, you know, either they already know it, or I've got players that aren't quite ready for it, or it's just irrelevant. But,
yeah. So do you ever get the levels, like, you know, beginners to advance in the one group?
Yes, sometimes.
Yeah,
sometimes
it's a bit tricky.
It can be a little tricky, but generally I put it out to people that we work on a intermediate to advanced level.
Mm.
And all that means is that hopefully everyone that turns up knows how to play. So they've got enough knowledge that we don't have to start with, this is the G string, also known as the third string, and yeah, the, you know, fret on the second fret, and that's an A, and so we don't have to start with that.
Mm.
We can go straight into, you know, sitting down and maybe jamming on a blues or a simple rock groove, and even by putting intermediate to advanced,
mm.
most advanced players aren't going to sign up for a workshop unless they really do want to learn something. So I've found even the, when I've had someone who's actually a really good player, I've had some people come to a workshop that I know they're out there playing gigs, and I've heard them play, and I'm like, man, you're pretty good. But they've signed up because they know there's gaps in their learning, or they've maybe seen, you know, just something that they can get out of a session like that. So they don't come along to show off to people. They don't come along to be an asshole. You know? They, you know, even a really good player, if they've signed up and they come in, they've come in to learn something.
Yeah. That's really good. Mm. Yeah, that's great. And do you have a most popular question that people ask?
Yes, the most common thing is, okay, I know my blues pentatonic scales. I know how to play, but I'm just bored with my playing. How can I make it more interesting? I'm just sick of hearing me do what I do.
Yeah.
That's the most common thing that I get, and I completely understand it because I suffer from it myself. Sometimes, and I think most players do, and it's one of the things that drives musicians to continuously learn. It's one of the reasons why it's a lifelong pursuit to be as good a musician as you can possibly be. You know, the amount of music there is to listen to is never ending. You know, it's absolutely infinite. You know, you'll never hear all of what there is, and if you've got a passion for it, you'll keep looking and keep trying to hear it. And so as a musician as well, you know, you're always hearing things that you don't know how to do. No matter how much you practice, you are still going to hear somebody play something or a piece of music that you can't comprehend how it was done, and that spurs you on to learn more. But that's the most common thing, you know, as players, maybe they can do all this, those Albert King licks, you know, which can take you, that's hours and hours and hours and hours of learning to try to play Albert King style stuff. But that gets the point where if that's what you do every time you pick it up, it's like hearing the same record over and over and over again. You know, so we put, yeah, a little added little added thing, twists in there, just to keep it fun and interesting.
That's really good. Yeah, I like it. I have to join up. Yeah, I mean, that's probably one of my main questions I get from my students. Yeah, they, like you said, they learn the pentatonic.
It's, yes.
Like, yeah, where do I go now? You know.
Yeah. I also have developed my own directions with teaching to guitar players, particularly blues and rock based players.
Mm.
And it's the thing that you just mentioned. It's because so many of those guitar players begin with the minor pentatonic scale.
Mm.
So many, that was the first thing that I learned. It was the first thing I was shown. I even figured out some of it by ear, you know, just listening to you know, Freddie King records and so on. And I figured out what the notes were that worked. And I thought I'd invented it. Yeah. I thought I'd invented this shape on the fretboard that worked. And so when I, yeah, finally it was pointed out, that's, oh, that old trick. that was a little disappointing. Because most guitar players, blues and rock style guitar players, we're talking, because that's the world that I inhabit for the most part, begin with that minor pentatonic scale. But if you get any books on music theory, it is going to start with the major scale.
Mm.
And the way that I put it to a lot of students that just had their brain fried is they can't get beyond this pentatonic scale. They want to know how the modes work, and they want to know how to put all these other melodic ideas into their playing. But their brain sort of melts when they pick up a theory book or they try to study theory. And it takes them back to the major scale and tries to relate everything to that, which, you know, blues players hardly ever play that scale.
Mm.
The do re mi, you know, that's good for Happy Birthday and Burt Bacharach songs, you know, but for blues, I mean, you know, that one, that major seventh, I mean, it's just a no-no. You know, it's just never used. But what we're actually playing most of the time is a minor scale.
Yep.
So when I teach to students, in our journey of learning the diatonic scales and the modes, we begin with the minor scale, the Aeolian mode. Yep. We begin with that because that's really ground zero for us. The minor pentatonic scale is ground zero. So, you know, to begin with diatonic scales, that's why I show them the minor scale first, and then we, you know, move it down three frets. Now we've got our major scale.
Yeah.
And so on. You know, I don't want to go through the whole thing.
No, that's
right. We'll be here for hours. But, that's the direction that I take.
Mm.
It's logical steps. That's the way that I see the fretboard. It's one big shape.
That's it.
And then you just move it around to where you need it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I try to teach my students that the fretboard is a scale. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, but isn't it great when you see that light pop go off now and again? It's like, oh, I already knew that.
As far as like exercises and warm up exercises for yourself or ones you might show other people, do you have any favourites?
Oh, look, it's just those little patterns, even that Allman Brothers type thing with going up a pentatonic scale and these sorts of. I don't know what it's called when you come up with some pattern like that. The patterns are infinite, and there's just different ways of going up and down the scale.
Mm.
So I like to pass on some of those sometimes because they're really good exercises for your muscle memory, and your fretting hand finds different ways of getting around that scale instead of just relying on coming up with some improvisational idea and then expecting that you can execute it just like that because you've thought of it. You know, those exercises are, you know, or those things like that, you know.
Mm.
Yeah, just nifty little things to pass on to students. If they go home and practice it, I think it just teaches your fingers, you know, right and left hand, or fretting and picking hand, I should say.
Yeah.
Because the motor skills for both of them and getting them to work in tandem, you know, that's a big part of practice. So that's a thing that I suggest.
My other question was, do you have any tips for up-and-coming guitarists? I mean, you've pretty much covered most of that, I think.
it's just practice. It's the age-old adage. I have had several students over the years that... sometimes it's through no fault of their own, you know, but they just don't find the time to practice. You know, sadly, you know, the fact is if you don't practice, you won't improve.
Mm.
There's just no two ways about it. You've got to have that guitar in your hand just as many hours of the day as you possibly can.
Yep.
And, you know, just play and play and play. You know?
Yep, for sure. And for improvising, I try and get my students to, you know, just get backing tracks to...
Yep.
And just do even like it's five notes.
Yes.
Get that started on the bottom half of pentatonic.
Yes, I know what you mean. There's lots of little things like that. Well, I'll try to get. We do this as an exercise when we're jamming, where we'll just take that the one little segment, like a little five note box, like that little Albert King thing I was doing, and the challenge is to not play outside of that box, to just milk those notes.
Yep.
For all they're worth, you know, and yeah, I know a lot of teachers use that method because that is hopefully going to sear into the brain, you know, just how much music is in that little part of the fretboard, and then you move to the next little position and do the same thing. Get as much music out of that little spot as you can. If it reminds me of that famous Hubble telescope picture, they took focused on a tiny little dark piece of space in the sky and just focused on it. And when they finally developed it, they found that it wasn't an empty piece of space at all. That there was there's thousands of galaxies that they found, just one little space like that. And so, which tells you that, you know, the whole of space is like that. But these little every little point on the guitar, music is infinite, sound is infinite, ideas are infinite. The tendency for us as guitar players to think I've just got to keep moving up and down the fretboard, and I've got to find another idea and another one, and I've got to go here. And some of the greatest solos ever made were just. Just simple, and they got space, and speaking of space, they got gaps and so on. But sometimes I'm successful with that. It depends on if a student is ready to hear that or not, or whether they believe me.
Yeah.
It's true, you know. we don't need all the flashy stuff all of the time.
Yeah.
But I guess you mentioned backing tracks. The other thing that I think is really, really handy for learning, and we're talking about single string soloing and improvising. But having a looping pedal, I think looping pedals have been a boon for learning. I know a lot of people use them in performance as well, but I think as a learning tool and a teaching tool, I use the little Boss looping pedal that I've got every teaching session that I do, just to be able to have that like a third guitar player that's laying down a rhythm track for us to jam on. And it's also that's the first stage for demo tapes for me as well. It's also my notepad where I can store ideas for songs and so on. So, I think they're brilliant for that.
I saw that the little demo you did recently for the Boss pedal. That was very nice, the little promo.
Oh, video. Yeah. that's their new AD10.
Looks very cool.
Yeah. Well, that was a nice call to get. They just wanted to... an acoustic guitar player, and I got together with them, and I played them a few different ideas of what I could play. I could do this. but they're like, oh, no. they didn't want flashy stuff. Of course, they just want people to hear how that unit performs. It's a really cool little unit.
Mm.
And, it's got loops and everything, but it's also a DI, and it's got, depending on what type of acoustic guitar you plug through it, it'll respond accordingly. So,
What are you playing acoustic-wise now, Jeff? Like, what do you got in your hands right there?
Oh, you can't see it, can you? No. It's my number one acoustic.
Very nice, yeah. You've had that one for a long time, haven't you?
Yeah, it's it's actually 20 years old this year.
Wow.
October of 1997.
Nice.
I got it from the Gibson Guitar Company. It was actually on that visit. I'll be going right back to the start of the interview. Was actually on that visit to the factory in 97 that I played a little concert for the workers as a thanks for this cool guitar.
Yeah.
And then before I left, the guy that was looking after me, Robbie, he said, "Do you want me teaching?" And I'm like, he said, "Yorma Kalkinen's got this cool place. You might be good as an instructor. I could call him if you like." So I said, all right.
Yeah, cool.
So that was the guitar that I picked up on the day. It's been my main squeeze ever since.
Wow, that's awesome. Mm. What about the electrics? Are you still using your Paul Reed Smith?
Yeah, I've got it. Actually, it's right here.
Excellent.
Right here. My little guitar room here. this is the main squeeze electric, and I've had this since 2012. This actually replaced the lovely gold top Paul Reed Smith, which I still have. It's been fixed now, but I famously ripped the neck off it. a rock and roll moment live on stage. Oh, I turned around to the guys. I'm like, "What have I done?" Yeah, it's a great instrument, and I like it. I get dissed a little bit by your blues and rock purists sometimes because it's a modern instrument. It's a modern guitar. I just love it. I think this is a perfect hybrid for me because it's got that, you can get that big thick, that thick sort of Gibson style tone. But it's also got the three pickups. You know, it's a humbucker at the back and then two mini buckers. So you can get those those stratty kind of tones as well if you want. So I use this when I'm playing live on stage. In the studio, if we want a Strat sound, I'll probably go for a Strat. But as a workhorse, I think this has just got everything I need.
Yeah, nice. Well, you're in pretty good company. You got Santana plays one. Neil Sean plays one too.
There's a lot of really famous cats, proper guitar players, some as well. Yeah, I was just so impressed with this mate from the first time I played. A friend of mine had bought one, and I'm like, oh, really? And I played it. I was like, oh my god, you know. I mean, they're just so well made. They're just really, really, really good product.
Awesome. What about amp wise? What are you using rig wise now?
I've been using one of Dave Ulbrich's 50 watt Arena 50 combos since I can't think what year I got it. It might have been 2005 or 2006, and I think I've actually got it's like the third one that Dave made.
Oh wow!
So I've got one of the really early ones, and I still go to Dave to get it serviced.
Yeah,
it's a real jam. I just can't imagine wanting to play another amp. It's not something I can travel with when I go overseas. Mm. So when I go to Atlanta, Georgia, there's a guy over there called Richard Goodsell, and Richard puts an act together for me for the duration of whatever tour I'm doing. Mm. He's like, Dave, they're just extraordinary amplifiers, just plug in, and it doesn't matter where the settings are in the amp, it's like, oh, that'll do. Big fan of that. And I still own a Fender Twin in England. So nice. When I go to England, I bought it over there years ago. So
yeah, cool.
So it's kind of paid for itself in rental fees.
Nice. What about pedals? Do you use many pedals or any pedals at all?
No, I use a Crybaby Wah these days. So that became a part of the rig not that long ago, probably 5 years ago or something. I started using it. It was a particular effect that I wanted for one of the tunes. I can't even remember which tune, and I decided at some point it's got to be a wah pedal. And then once it was there, you know what gear's like. Once it's there, you use it.
Of course, yeah.
So there's a thing to stomp on. So so since then, I've really enjoyed getting to know what it can do. It's not just that. I don't have one plugged in, but it's not just good for the. It's not just a chucka chucka chicky wah wah kind of thing.
Yeah,
there's lots of other sounds and tones that you can get out of it. That especially when you're in a three piece sort of small setup, it really gives you a lot of scope to bring some other sounds into the group. And another thing I started doing was playing a bit of slide. And for similar reasons, just because I guess I was just getting tired of hearing that one guitar in the three-piece band all the time. So by switching to slide every now and again, I was able to bring that another voice in. I'm a huge fan of the Allman Brothers, as you know, but it took me years and years and years to get the gumption to pull a slide out of my pocket live on stage. I actually had this little thing made.
Oh, cool.
See. Oh, well.
The slide holder, that's cool.
My local leather man made this. So we got a clip from a mobile phone, And then I got him to make this little leather holster, and it's just right for the slide. But if I poke the slide all the way through, it won't fall out. But anyway, it just clips onto the strap.
That's cool.
So while I'm playing, I have that at the ready, so I can and then just grab the slide.
That's
cool, man.
That's my invention.
Yeah, I like it. Patent that.
Yeah.
are you fingers and a pick? Are you
both? Yeah. So I when I'm playing electric guitar, I'm holding a flat pick all of the time.
Okay.
At all times, but there's two ways of playing it. So using the pick. I'll see if I can show you. Yep. And it's hard to do on purpose. So I've switched to fingers in the middle of that. Playing with fingers. And now I'm back to the plectrum. I don't know if you saw the switch.
Yeah, very cool.
Magic.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. I'm not the only player that does that.
Yeah.
But it becomes, when you play live a lot, it becomes sort of automatic pilot. You just get sick of finding somewhere to put the pick down and then switch to the fingers and then, oh, where did I put that pick?
So
you develop things. Well, if you watch Brian Setzer, he's incredible. He puts it in there.
Yeah.
I mean, he does all this amazing finger picking. I couldn't do that to save myself. But that's what he's developed. And it's like it's there and then it's back there. And, I mean, who was the guy out of Leonard Skinner? It's that famous video of him doing Freebird.
Oh, yeah.
And, the guy, he's got it there.
Yeah, right.
And then later on in the song, he's. But I don't know how they do it, you know. Yeah, it just kind of evolves.
Very cool.
That's good. So as far as now, I've pretty much covered all the guitar questions. So what are you up to now?
What
are you playing?
Okay, so I've just done this big gig with the Blues Club Revival. That's a group that we've put together to celebrate and honour our old boss, Dutch Tilders.
Yeah.
I don't know who'll be watching this, but Dutch is sort of the godfather of the blues scene in Australia. He's a magnificent guitar player and singer, and he kind of introduced Australia to what the blues was all about. And so, several of us that played in bands with him back in the day, we now do this occasional group. So I don't know when the next one will be with that group. So now I have a few regional gigs, playing some acoustic shows, and I'm sort of celebrating my little 20 years with that lovely, lovely Gibson acoustic guitar.
Nice.
So I'm playing some solo shows and telling some stories from the road. But gearing up for my next visit to the US, which will be in October.
Awesome.
Yeah, back to Atlanta, Georgia, and playing with Yonrico Scott on drums. Mm. And a guy called Brian Hall on bass, who I will meet once I get over there. But apparently he's a really good player. And this is how we do it. So generally I get myself over there and they'll have some musicians for me. But Rico, I've worked with many, many times. He's an absolute legend of a drummer, Grammy Award winner. He was in the Derek Trucks band for 16 years or something, and plays with Earl Klug, folks like that. So he's a bit of a rock star. And Brian Hall is Jimmy Hall's son, I believe. So he's rock royalty too.
Cool.
So I get to rub shoulders with these guys when I go over there. But this is how we've made it work. Of course, I would dearly love to take the Soul Diggers from Melbourne to wherever I go overseas. But independent blues and roots scene, the cost is just prohibitive. Mm. You know, it's... We've just never been able to make that happen. But by going over there and getting hiring local players, I've been able to sustain something that resembles an international career in music. And it's great. It's great. I'm kind of talking it down a bit, but it's I've lost count of how many tours I've done in the States. I've got a fantastic group of guys in England that I work with as well. And I'm looking forward to going back there in March of next year. And in the meantime, I'll be back here in Melbourne and playing a few shows around here, a little bit of interstate stuff here and there. I've got a show coming up in Adelaide in November, which is a childhood cancer benefit concert. And again, they're going to put a band together for me and maybe some special guests. So that'll be fun. Somehow I keep busy.
That's good.
Yeah, fantastic.
Very good. And I adore it. I live to play and I play to live.
Yeah. That's great.
You're doing great, man.
Yeah.
Do you want to get Jeff to just plug anything before your battery dies?
Oh, yeah.
Plug a website and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, where people can contact with you?
My website is jeffatchison.com.
Yep.
Easy to say, hard to spell. So it's GeoffAchison.
Yeah.
I'll put the link on Facebook, of course.
Yep.
Yeah. Facebook. Yeah, Jeff Atchison Music, Facebook.com. Jeff Atchison Music is probably the best one to go to.
Yeah.
And we've got videos and tour news and all sorts of fun stuff.
Oh, great. Mm-hmm. That's really good.
Pleasure, always, Jeff.
Yeah. Great to chat with you.
Yeah, you too, thanks, sir.
It's been really fun.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right.
All right, good luck with everything.
Talk to you soon, sir. Thank you.
Bye. I hope you guys enjoyed the interview with Jeff. I know I certainly did, and it was great to share it with Mark. Hopefully we'll get to do more in the future because, like I said, Mark's got a lot of contacts in the blues industry, so hopefully we'll get that happening real soon. Just a few announcements from previous guests I've had on the podcast. Now, first of all, Ian Archibald, that was on episode 6 with me, my old student. You can go over to his Facebook page. You can win tickets to his secret album launch, which is coming up real soon. And you can also pre-order the new album, which is coming out, which I really look forward to hearing. And also, don't forget my guest last week, Jennifer Batten from the Michael Jackson Band. She has her album coming out on September 22nd. So you can head on over to her website to check that one out. Now, next week, I have a really special podcast. I'm actually interviewing some of my kids that I teach, starting from the age of 6. So I get to ask them questions about how they're enjoying playing guitar, also some of their things they find difficult playing. So it's a really good insight for anyone who has kids wanting to learn guitar, or even anyone that wants to learn guitar, where most people have a little bit of trouble starting to learn and the most common problems people have. And don't forget my very special sponsors, Guitar World, and also Custom Guitar Picks. So check out the links in the notes of this podcast to find out where you can get in contact with Gus at Custom Guitar Picks and Mick at Guitar World for your service and repairs. And this week I'm also glad to announce I have a new sponsor, which is Bunpai Thai Massage in Bundoora, number 11 1320 Plenty Road, Bundoora, Melbourne, Australia. So all those people in Melbourne, after a long weekend of gigs and practicing with your sore hands and sore necks from your guitar strap, head on over to Bunpai Thai Massage. They'll definitely be able to help you out and get you back shredding in no time. So also, don't forget to rate, review and share this podcast with all your friends and family. I hope you can join me next Wednesday. So until then, keep jamming.